We present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Thank you. Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the newsletter of the Park Langley Tennis Club, read by Brian Perkins.
Regular visitors to the club will have seen the continuous improvements. The ladies have been wallpapered and repainted.
I'd like to thank Gavin Ford of Guildford for sending us that. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Francis Ween and Clive Anderson. Facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Andy Hamilton. Before we start round one, here's a piece from the Daily Telegraph sent in by Mr. W.J. Wilde of Essex.
From the news sheet of the parishes of Tilshead, Orchiston and Chitton, 9 a.m. Holy Communion, 11 a.m. Holy Communion, 6 p.m. Even Snog.
Francis, you get the first question, and it's this. What claim of betrayal was met by a marching order?
Oh, I think this is probably the Reverend John Major.
Yes.
Who had a meeting at Downing Street with so-called Reverend Ian Paisley, so-called doctor. Do you know where his doctorate comes from? It comes from the Bob Jones University of North Carolina, that distinguished seat of learning. This is true, by the way. Anyway, Ian Paisley went to see John Major at Downing Street, and Major said he wouldn't talk to him unless Paisley was prepared to say, "I believe every word you say." And Paisley wasn't prepared to say that he believed everything John Major said. And so Major said, "Well, that's it," and stomped out and huff. So it now means that Major has effectively banned the entire British public from speaking to him.
He feels it's safer, obviously. Yes, this is 10 Downing Street, where a much ridiculed marginal political figure met Ian Paisley. The fiery Democratic Unionist had the audacity to question the Prime Minister's authority. How dare he? That's the Cabinet's job. Right. Five, nice to have you back on the programme. Whose tenants account for themselves royally?
This is some tittle-tattle that the press have got up, that the Queen gets £20 million. No, she has lots of houses that she allows people to live in, which are apparently worth quite a lot, and she ought to be charging them. She ought to be more like Rackman and getting more money out of the Dowager Duchess of this, who's worked for a million years. And that in the spirit of a more meritocratic age, she shouldn't be allowed to give out grace and favour houses to grace or favour or anywhere like that. It's all been denied now. And
she had a phone bill, didn't she, of £788,000. So yeah. I think Di has been sneaking in and using the phone. I don't think it's possible otherwise.
This is all about the Queen's own household budget, which is running at £20 million a year. It seems that most of the cash goes on oddly titled employees that don't appear to have real jobs. A sub-dean of the insignia, a deputy head bookbinder, a retired Greek naval officer. An all-party committee of MPs has called for royal endowments to come under closer scrutiny, but a German magazine got there first. Andy, after your timely introduction, here's your question. Who's waxing over a benefit axing?
Is it anything to do with Jonathan Aitken?
It's all to do with Jonathan Aitken.
Jonathan Aitken, who apparently is the prettiest member of the cabinet. I can't remember whether it was a think tank document or something. He was giving an interview and he said that they're going to have to cut down on housing benefit, particularly housing benefit for poor people, because it's just an inconvenience. And and then some of the press pointed out that he's rather well off for houses. And I got bored after that. I didn't follow.
Wait a minute.
What about Kenneth Clark?
What about him?
You said that Jonathan Aitken was the prettiest member of the cabinet. Surely. I demand a recount.
Also, John Gummer is still in the government, isn't he?
John what? Gummer? No, he's hunky. He's not pretty.
Yes, he's sort of halfway between he's pretty hunky and everybody. This is Treasury Secretary Jonathan Aitken, who signalled deep cuts in public spending by claiming people on benefit were becoming too comfortable. You know, some of them have got a cardboard box each. The MP, constituency Cloud Cuckoo Land East, has targeted housing benefit because he says many claimants boast a spare room. And who said people didn't do well under the Tories, eh? Alan, will you have a listen to this?
Maybe the choice you made wasn't really right, but you go out and you don't come back at night, so...
There was a group called Twice As Much, and the song was Sitting on the Fence. And your question is, who wouldn't take a side at the seaside?
It's Matt's Blair Blackpool Rock joke. It's Tony Blair Rock. It says nothing all the way through. I mean, he refused to commit himself to anything, either on the Sigmund strike or where the Labour Party stood on the unions, and what they're going to do about revoking the Conservative legislation on the unions. I mean, he just sort of walked up and down eating his whelks and doing nothing very much. I suppose that is it. I mean,
that is it.
The fence that he sits on. It's now right up to about neck height. Must be enormously uncomfortable.
This was at the TUC Congress, where a motion was passed calling for the Rail dispute to be negotiated without government interference, and Tony Blair decided to get some practice in by not interfering as well. He later came under attack from miners' leader Arthur Scargill, who also called for his entire following to strike in support of the railmen with a cry of, "One out! One out!" And the scores at the end of round one are quite interesting, but not that much, because, as is usual on this programme, it's for all. Nobody loses yet. We start round two with something spotted in the Byfleet News and Mail.
It comes as no surprise to learn that Julia Elkin's newborn son appears to be something of a music lover. She took up the flute last August and soon afterwards found she was pregnant.
Cause and effect there from the Byfleet News and Mail. Francis, your question again. Who didn't make an altogether happy picture?
This couldn't be the man with the enormous phone bill, could it?
Well, it could be, I suppose.
Which has been airbrushed out of the photograph that appeared in Bild newspaper in Germany. Are we on the right lines here?
Right?
Yes. Prince Charles was on holiday in France. He had a shower, and for some reason, somebody took a picture of him coming out of his shower. But very tastefully, Parry Match and Bild have covered up what the Sun referred to as the crown, orbs and sceptre.
Well, there's good taste for you.
It's pitiful, really. They take 20 million a year off us, as we've just heard, and they can't even afford to buy them a pair of underpants. Where does the money go, I ask
Wait
myself.
A minute. You
mean
or
a dressing gown.
You wear underpants in the shower, do you, Alan?
Alan Corrin is very modest, I might tell you.
He wasn't in the shower.
I think it's dreadful.
He was standing at a window waving.
and then he got caught by the paparazzi, which is...
These are the scurrilous pictures of the Prince of Wales published in Germany and France, which show him wearing nothing but a towel over his shoulder. The publishers compared Charles' figure to that of Michelangelo's David, and taking a tape measure to the statue proved they are similar. David also has a very large pair of ears. Thank you, Bob and Ian. Clive, who's feeling a little run down with a legal bill that's kids' stuff?
Oh, no, luckily, I was talking to one of my fellow competitors on the way in, who's on the other side, and he isn't called Alan Corrin. There's some woman, according to Andy Hamilton, and I haven't seen this in the papers, who ran down a 9-year-old child. Obviously, she'd been in America or something and worked out that you can sue anybody these days. And she's suing the 9-year-old child for denting her wing mirror or something. And I don't see why she shouldn't do that. It'll be an interesting court case. Some lawyers will make some money, and there's no harm in that, is there?
Absolutely not.
He blatantly plowed his skull into her panels or something.
Right.
No lights, no stoplight, no indicators, nothing. He won't have any money, mind you, and it's very difficult to get to sue anybody that age, but she'll discover that when she's exhausted her funds with her first set of lawyers.
I'm given to understand that a Mr. Anderson is available. This is Sarah Dawson, who is suing a 10-year-old boy for the damage he did to her car when she ran him over. Peter Biggs, said by his co-defendant father to be a chip off the old paintwork, has hired a solicitor whose daily fee will be £180, three conkers and a Beano annual. The outcome of the case is being watched keenly by lawyers representing the Eskimo nation for the damage the Titanic did to one of their favourite icebergs. Andy, will you have a listen to this? Well, that was the Tom Robinson Band and 2468 Motorway. And your question is, why will we be driven to crying on a hard shoulder by the end of the century?
It'll be M25 south of Birmingham and M1 north of Birmingham. There'll be nothing. It'll just be a nice concrete cone.
Is that a story, or is that just you and I?
No, just you and I chatting.
It must be the cone line.
We are going to have 23 million cars, and nothing will actually move anywhere. I mean, some statistician, probably the Ministry of Transport, sat down.
It doesn't move now.
It doesn't move at all.
Is that the story?
It is the story.
Worked out that if the traffic goes on the way it is, it's going to eventually come to a stop.
It must be about the cone line, though, because they've published the report of the cone...
Nobody rang it.
Thousands of people have rung it, and they've discovered that there are three instances of cones.
That's
right.
Somewhere. Is that another question coming up?
No, that's in this question.
Bonus. I'll go for
give
a bonus on that.
Give the young man a bonus. Give the barrister a bonus. We never know when we might need it.
We call it a refresher, actually.
Oh, a refresher. This is the news that 40% of Britain's motorways will be almost completely choked by the year 2000, so there's a nice improvement to look forward to. This report comes in the same week it was revealed that Cone's telephone hotline is next to useless. Of the many thousands of calls made, only two resulted in Cone's actually being removed, and they were from a student bedsit in the North Staffordshire. Alan, your question now. What visitors found Essex to be no joke?
It's not the fight in Cyprus between the four blokes from Essex and the four Germans about the sunbeds.
No, it is. It's about people in Essex who
came. People came on a trip to Essex from
Well,
the
yes, they were.
They came on a holiday to Brentford and they were disappointed.
Barry, do you want.
These are the people who are going to.
We have an Essex man here who can. Both an Essex man and an Islington person that can cover these things. It's a lot of refugees.
That's right.
From the war in the former Yugoslavia.
Yes.
Who were put in near Brentwood, I think it was.
Yes.
That line of Essex. And the neighbours were beastly to them. They shouted insults through their letterboxes, made their lives a misery. And these people now want to go back to the war zone rather than live in southern Essex.
Well, anybody would rather than live in Essex, wouldn't they, really?
True. This is all about the Bosnian refugees who would rather go back home than live in Essex. The authorities blame the language barrier, as only a few refugees can speak fluent Serbo-Ilford. Meanwhile, a South Ockenden man said he couldn't be a xenophobe because he had a girlfriend. And the scores at the end of round two are becoming more interesting even as I speak. Because Alan and Andy have 6, but Francis and Clive are well in the lead with 10. Francis, who was hoist by his own petard, not using his own card?
This is the credit card fraudster,
yes.
Or possibly Fordster, who... was let off a prison sentence.
That's right.
Because while he was trying to use this stolen credit card in a garage, the man behind the counter said, "This is stolen, you can't use it." He then leapt over the counter and a security grill leapt up and hoisted him on his petard. And the reason he was let off a prison sentence was the judge said that he had suffered such humiliation because the jury had seen the video of him hanging from this device. and the jury had all laughed when the video was shown in court. And the judge said, "You've suffered enough having the jury laugh at you, so off you go."
This man actually appeared on... it's a very happy story because he has turned away from crime because I saw him on London News Network saying to camera, he said, "Well, yeah, it was very humiliating and it is, you know, I can see the funny side now." And then he said, and now I am turning away from crime thanks to London News Network. And...
That was the judge, though, Andy.
This is the story of Ronald Truman, who tried to use a stolen credit card in a petrol station. When the security tape was replayed in court, the jury laughed so much they nearly woke the judge up. Clive, here's a piece of music for you.
Thank you.
Ascot Gavotte from My Fair Lady. And the question is, who has got a five-year ban for a bit of horseplay?
Oh, that's quite an easy question. He was a bit of a drunk, this chap, and he's a suffragette for drunks. he demanded they should be given the vote or another round or something, and he, for some reason, decided, it's probably best, to throw himself under the Queen's horse, or anyway, a horse at Royal Ascot. And this caused him a little bit of injury and putting the jockey down, the horse down. And the jockey club have banned him from every possible race course in the land. So how are they going to enforce that? I don't know. Maybe they'll just chuck out every drunk they see and cripple racing for the rest of time.
But it's another example of someone getting off from the criminal offence because he's been humiliated publicly. I mean, this first one who was fixed to the ceiling by this credit card thing, and now this bloke was just... What's happened to him? He's just been banned from going racing for 5 years.
Well, I think that's probably the limit of the powers of the jockey club, really. They don't have... I mean, they could give him a good kicking, I suppose, or nut him in the kneecaps or something, but that's... They're jockeys, for goodness sake.
This is a 21-year-old out of Bracknell, James Florey. James was banned from racecourses for 5 years after getting drunk at Ascot and running out into a race. You know how it is. You go for a day out, have a few beers, maybe take in a mill, throw yourself under a hoose of a passing three-time Arab gelding, and later a horse. Andy, which Swede was caught in a royal jam?
Ah, yes. Yes, now, in my issue of Marmalade Manufacturers Weekly, I saw this as a way, apparently a way of maturing your marmalade is to smear it over members of the Swedish royal family while they're attending confirmation classes. I didn't really know that. The thing that did amuse me about that story was that one of the principals or somebody at this course said that the young people got anxious and took their clothes off. Which is... You know, I've done that. I feel a bit anxious. Quick, take my clothes off. Get the old fine cut out of the cupboard and so...
Well, it's better than a free golly, isn't it?
Anyway, so that's that story. But I think being Swedish, they're not going to be shocked by people running around in the nude quite like we are. Maybe if Charles had... No, I won't go into that.
That way madness lies. This is the sex scandal which has engulfed Prince Carl Philip of Sweden. On a religious course, the prince was alleged to have licked jam from the bodies of other students. A shocking breach of etiquette. It's Marmite on flesh.
We're not going to have that other terrific Copenhagen Zoo Scandinavian story, are we?
No.
About the okapi.
No. I think we are, Alan.
Are we?
We?
No.
What happened
to the
okapi?
It was wonderful to telegraph this.
What was that?
There's an extremely rare Zimbabwean okapi in Copenhagen Zoo. And there was a Wagner concert in the park next door. And the okapi hyperventilated and died. And it was then claimed by the Museum of Natural History because it was so rare. And they took it to the Museum of Natural History in Copenhagen. And they went back the next morning, and it had been eaten by students at a barbecue.
Alan, your question now. How do you get several minis into a jumbo?
It's not the little boy who's the 9-year-old boy who stole the mini.
No. It's minis.
Oh, yes. It's just a bit of marketing for Japanese Airlines. Is it Japanese Airlines who have apparently decreed that their air hostesses have to dress as Minnie Mouse? And the air hostesses have said that they found this a bit demeaning, actually, and they'd rather not dress as Minnie Mouse if that's all the same to them. I think they really objected to probably being Japanese Airlines. They make them do the work song in those very high-pitched voices. I don't know, but that's. I think they've got a deal with Disney, and they paint Disney characters on the planes. And
that's right. It's all about Japanese Airlines, whose cabin staff are revolting over having to dress up as Walt Disney characters. If they wanted to work in a Mickey Mouse outfit, they'd have got jobs with Virgin. There's another case for you, Clive. The plan is for stewardesses to wear red polka dot headbands, big mouse ears, and white gloves with three fingers. Even though they don't need that many to express their reaction. The scores at the end of the third round are even more interesting than the question. Because Alan and Andy are now 11, but Francis and Clive are still in the lead with 14. Before we start the final round, here's an item from the Chichester Observer.
Wanted, responsible person for ironing and walking two small dogs.
Well, thank you, Kate Allen of Selsey, for that. Francis, here's your piece of music.
Young man Joe swinging through the trees. He was the king of everything that roosted in the leaves. But when he saw a girl there, hanging in the breeze.
That was Mighty Mo singing Ape Call. Your question is, which servants may be civil but live by the law of the jungle?
Oh, I think my colleague here seems to know about this. Servants, civil, law, jungle.
Yeah, I know this.
All right, well, I'll pass it over to the barrister.
Well, I think they were saying that the way, some sort of sociological study, probably done by Desmond Morris or somebody like that, the way civil servants behave towards each other, they're like a pecking order, like baboons.
That's
have
right.
In the jungle, which I think involves smelling each other's private parts or something. that may be just the Foreign Office, I don't know, but it's something like that. So the headline, I thought you'd have seen that.
Yes, that's right.
But, you know, the civil servants are baboons or something.
This is the study that proves civil servants and baboons share the same hierarchical structures and stress problems. The civil service weren't impressed with the study, but were unable to make a statement as the press office were out on a training course learning how to swing about on some second-hand car tyres. Clive, brilliant man that you are, G-man, who had a hairy time meeting his Waterloo?
G-man, it's an American, is it?
That's right.
An American.
Yep.
Met his Waterloo.
Yep.
Was this Waterloo Station or the battlefield?
Ah.
The FBI have been called in to find out how Napoleon died, because they're not satisfied with the English explanation, which was poisoned by his wallpaper.
That's right.
we knew that.
And they're concluding that the Russians did it, are they?
Bad things happened to him. After his post-mortem, as you know, his private parts were sold. Our prince can count himself lucky, but Napoleon was chopped off. And one of his hairs was removed. And in 1930, the English, who were feeling guilty 100 years later, analysed his hair and found he'd been poisoned. And they said that he'd been poisoned as a result of being in a room with this cheap wallpaper, as they used arsenic in the glue. Just to show how devious the English were. And the FBI have been asked to investigate whether this is true or not. And they've discovered that it might be.
You're absolutely right, Alan. Every particular, it's all about the FBI, who are investigating why Napoleon died. You'd think the fact that he was born in 1769 might have had something. Andy, your question, what set the pace for a dog's life?
Dog died, and they took a heart from a bloke who died.
Uh-huh.
And they took a pacemaker out of this bloke's heart, this dead bloke. I'm telling Andy, there's nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, do you mind if we overhear this?
Well, a dog...
Yes, yes.
...was not very well.
No.
And he needed a pacemaker.
Yes.
And its owner had 1,200 quid. And its owner knew a bloke who was feeling a bit rough, and the bloke died. And they took the pacemaker out of the dead bloke and put it in the dog.
Right.
And the dog's now terrific. The bloke's not too hot. Pacemaker.
This is the pioneering transplant surgery which allowed a 13-year-old mongrel to be fitted with a human pacemaker. Patty's owner claims the only problem stems from some faulty wiring, which means that every time the dog cocks his leg, the automatic garage door is open. Alan, your question now. Who kept a grip on reality during a 3-mile journey of faith?
It must be the vicar, Dennis Handley, who, in another absolutely daft crime this week, once you've got John Cleese running and belting people with a shooting stick, and this bloke running under a horse, and the other fellow who told the judge he'd sentenced him to 9 years, it wasn't enough. Another bizarre crime. Someone dug up the vicar's crazy paving. In the middle of the night, this van went off at 70 miles an hour, and the vicar said, "Stop, and that's my driveway," and leapt onto the back of this lorry and followed them for 3 miles. Hold. watching old Harold Lloyd movies, and I don't know what happened at the other end. I don't know whether he got his drain back or his road, but they stole his flagstones.
That's right, and he chased them. You're absolutely right. Amazingly, the plucky cleric failed to draw the attention of passing motorists. Yes, they thought he was the latest in a new range of Garfields. However, before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis, have you brought a cutting for us?
Yes, this is from The Observer a week or two ago. Mohammed Ismail Al-Barami, a 105-year-old Iranian, wants to divorce his 100-year-old wife because he says she pockets most of his money instead of banking it. The wife, Fatemeh Razavi, said, "We used to have a sweet life until a month ago."
Clive.
This is a report from the East Anglian Daily Times, and it's about an arsonist. In fact, it's a barrister appearing on behalf of an arsonist who'd set fire to some stuff in a sort of campsite. Charles Llewellyn was the barrister, and Mr. Llewellyn said, "My client feels he's been picked on. There were others who had petrol and were burning caravans. My client is carrying the can for everybody on the site."
Andy.
Right, can I just warn listeners that I may attempt an accent in this? This is from Luxembourg, sent in from Luxembourg. And it says, "The world of Australian rules football was agog when a player was sent off and severely reprimanded for kissing an opponent on the lips. Russell Prowse thought a fight was developing during a match between Cardross and Bambil, and instead of throwing a punch, he grabbed Bambil's Scott Cameron by the cheeks and kissed him. Cardross president Keith Leach says, 'We felt sorry for Cameron. Prowse is not an attractive man.'"
Alan. I may have to attempt an accent with this one, Barry, because it's from the Coorangatta Herald, New South Wales. It's from their missing persons column. It says, "Jack Borthwick is anxious to trace his wife, Mariel, who left their family home at 46 Walnut Creek, Coorangatta, 3 weeks ago and has not been in touch since. If anyone knows of her whereabouts, would they please contact him at that address? If you are reading this, Mariel, please come home. Or failing that, leave the truck somewhere convenient."
Thank you all. Now let's look at the final score. And it's quite...